You're listening to the PMO Strategies Podcast, where PMO leaders become impact drivers. This is episode 251. Well, hey there, impact driver. Welcome to the PMO Strategies Podcast. I am your host, Laura Bernard. Before we dive in, I just want to let you know that we have something very special coming up. I want to remind you that the second Tuesday in May is International PMO Day, and it is right around the corner. This year, it'll be on Tuesday, May 14th, 2024, and we are going to be celebrating big. This is an opportunity for all PMO and project management professionals to celebrate the power of the PMO to make a huge impact in every organization. PMOs are often the unsung heroes of successful project, program, portfolio, and yes, even product management. They help align projects with business goals, optimize resources, and accelerate the impact any organization can make. So, how can you get involved in International PMO Day? Well, there are plenty of ways. If you are a PMO professional, take some time to reflect on your achievements and the impact that you've made so far this year and over the last year. If you lead a PMO team, now's the time to think about organizing some fun activities to boost morale and celebrate your collective successes and get the word out about all the great work you're doing. Now, May 14th is a very, very special day for us here at PMO Strategies, and I'm not going to give it all away, but let's just say we are going to be celebrating really, really big. So if you want to join us for International PMO Day, just go to pmostrategies.com/PMO Day. That's pmostrategies.com/PMO Day to get a little bit of a sneak peek of what we'll be celebrating on International PMO Day. And join us for free for that celebration. Join us on Zoom, set up in a conference room, bring cake, of course, and celebrate with us on International PMO Day, May 14th. I hope to see you there. As of 2023, women hold 26.7% of technology jobs. Compared to entry-level roles, roles higher up in the organization have even lower representation of women. This leaves women left struggling to navigate personal and professional demands with little to no support. Where do women learn to summon the courage to lead while handling their day-to-day lives? This episode is for all technologists who are seeking an open and frank discussion about the realities of being a female project manager in tech. It's for men who want to make a seat at the table for powerful women to fill. It's for the women who are ready to fill their cups and pour their brilliance out into the world. We're about to have an honest conversation and provide some clear direction, empowering information, and equip you to rise up beyond the challenges and step into your professional superpower to become the leader in project management you know you can be. And for those of you listening to support others, the techniques and guidance you need to do just that. We're talking about dominating the field as a woman in project management, how you can do that yourself, and how to support people in your world that need a seat at that table so that you can get to the better business outcomes your organization must have to thrive. With me today is Aprielle Biggs. Aprielle is a technologist, thought leader, and change agent known for bringing humanity to corporate workspaces. Aprielle guides individuals, organizations, and teams to build bridges to realize a powerful and meaningful vision. She is committed to helping technologists craft their own leadership journeys while maintaining their sense of self. As the founder of Blagile, an organization dedicated to amplifying and elevating Black and Brown voices in Agile, Aprielle is passionate about creating spaces for people to thrive at work. Recently, Aprielle received the Certified Enterprise Agile Coach, CEC, certification from the Scrum Alliance. This is arguably the most prestigious agile coaching certification in the world, with only 137 people holding it worldwide. It recognizes her depth of skill and impact in human and organizational systems, as well as her ability to operate at an executive level. Wow. Congratulations, Aprielle. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much, Laura. I'm so excited to be here, and I am so excited for today's conversation.
Oh, I am too. And there might be some people wondering if this is a touchy subject, and I would say it shouldn't be, and we should be getting all of this out in the open so that we can have real, honest conversations about the truth of where we are and where we need to take our organizations and lead our people to a better future.
I agree with you, because I think oftentimes, you know, we leave things in the dark and in the shadows and they never get addressed. And so when things are out in the open and we roll back the carpet, like just in our own houses, right? When we sweep out the cobwebs from the corners, then we can really say that things are clean and we can begin to put things in their proper place.
Ah, that's great. All right. So how about we just dive right in, both feet, and just jump in the deep end and make some magic happen in this conversation. What do you say? All right. I love it. I love it. So for those of you that don't know Aprielle, she's a woman after my own heart of just direct, honest conversation and getting right to the point of it, which is what I absolutely love about her. So you ready to go? Let's do this.
Ready.
Strap in, everyone. This is going to be a ride. Okay. So let's just start right at the top. Women often have a bad rap in leadership. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons for that. But I would be curious what your reason is, why you think that is, that women will have a bad rap in leadership, and how you are personally changing that perception.
A couple of things actually come to mind. So the first, as we think about technology, right, most of us are project managers in technical organizations, and largely those organizations are still dominated by men. And so for the most part, men have written the rules for what good looks like in the organizations that we work. And I think a lot of times, at least when I came up through the ranks, I was coached by men that I had to be like men, which is virtually impossible. I would have to die and come back twice in order for that to happen. And so very seldom do I find another female leader, and you guys, Laura is amazing at this, who says that it's okay for you to be who you are. You need to figure out like your unique sauce. That's the way that I say it, your unique sauce, and bring that to every single opportunity, engagement, and workspace in order for you to stand 10 toes down for yourself.
Right, for sure. Now, I also grew up in tech. In fact, I have a computer science degree from Virginia Tech, go Hokies. And it was a very strong computer science school back in a gazillion years ago when I got my degree, and it still is. But I was one of four women in my graduating class because there weren't that many women back in getting a computer science degree from such a hard school back in the day. And I remember walking into rooms early. I mean, this is like when I was going through school. I would walk into classrooms and I'd be the only woman there, and people would be thinking that I was in the wrong place. I did not fit in, right? So I started my career with this you don't belong here experience. And it wasn't actually, I don't think it was intentional for most of them. They're just like, didn't know what to do with me, right? And I was, you know, a little bit like I am now. So imagine me walking into a classroom in the 90s saying, all right, I'm here and we're going to do some fun stuff. So anyway, and over time, I grew up in technology, right? A lot of the work I did was in software development. Then I made my way into technical project leadership and then built PMOs for organizations doing a lot of tech work. So I lived and breathed this stuff and have the battle scars to prove it. And what always frustrated me was seeing that there were different rules for men than there were for women in tech. At least that was my experience. And I'm not saying it's like that today. I'm not saying it's like that everywhere. I'm saying it is like that some places still today. And my personal experience was the rules were different and didn't seem to really create the equality that we needed in order to do the work that we needed to do with the same freedoms that men were having in these same conversations. What do you think about that?
I 100% agree. And the same battle scars that you have, I also have. I will never forget being a junior engineer. So when I started my career in aerospace, I walked onto a very senior team. Every single man on the team was old enough to be my father, and they treated me like I was their child. And I would walk into rooms, and I'll never forget this. We were, you know, traveling and presenting a technical readiness strategy to the government And I was actually the lead engineer on the project. And one of the highest ranking officials, we were on a break, had walked into the break room and was like, you know, I'd like a cup of coffee. And I looked at him and said, I'd love one too. I was like, I take mine cream, no sugar. Thank you. And so, and then after the break, I was the first up to present. And so he later came to me and he said, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And I just smiled at him and I said, you know, things have changed a lot. And I said, it's important to remember that. And so, you know, his face turned red, right?
Yeah.
And so to your point about that, the rules are different between men and women. It permeates all different levels, all different organizations. And I think it's something that we as women need to know how we walk into rooms still today in 2023, knowing that this could be some of the shenanigans that we encounter. And so one of the things that I think is always important is that as a woman, it's important to walk into every room that you enter in the fullness of who you are. You bring yourself to every experience, but you get to decide which parts of yourself that you allow people to access. And so I think as women, we have to think about ways to keep ourselves safe, right? Because many of us are wives, we're mothers, we're daughters, we're sisters, we're confidants. And so people pull on us so much. And so we cannot pour from an empty cup. And the way to make certain that our cup is always full is about being judicious, being deliberate, and being intentional about the parts of ourselves that we choose to give away.
Oh, that is so good. And that resonates so clearly with me because I feel like I'm doing that every day. I always tell people I'm actually an introvert and they don't believe me, of course. Yeah, but it's according to Myers-Briggs, I am. I get my energy from the time I spend alone, self-care, taking care of myself. It's why my coaching students in the mastermind program always hear me talking about putting their oxygen mask on first so that they can take care of themselves before taking care of others. And I still find myself in places where I call it peopling, right? Like I'm peopling a lot and giving so much of my heart and soul to my coaching students, my clients, and then of course, my family, my friends, my, you know, all of the people that I'm interacting with on a daily basis. And when you give all of you, it can be dangerous because you can give so much of you that you are exhausted all the time. And so I love that the way you said you choose how much people will access and you protect parts of yourself so that you're not vulnerable. And also being vulnerable is okay to an extent, but it's how much you do that and making sure that you are still protecting the core of who you are and being who you are.
Yeah, I think for me, one of the things that I have come to just a way of being, if you will, and I think in working with you, you reinforce this, is being a woman in project management, right? One of the things that we do as PMs is we help to reduce risk.
Yeah.
And we make certain that the systems that we set up, the products that we're ultimately helping to release and the deliveries that we're helping to drive are done so in a safe environment. We never do that with ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's an opportunity for us to take a lot of what we've learned in terms of what we do and how we're good and how we show up at work for other people to ultimately show up for ourselves. You know, what would it look like for us to apply risk reduction to our own life? That means that we would have to be very clear about where we draw lines. And for myself, I draw lines unequivocally at harm. Harm to myself, harm to systems, harm to people, harm to the environment. I draw lines at harm, like 100% full stop. There's no questions about it. And so if we were to start to think about how does risk reduction apply to us? How are we actually honoring our own boundaries of time and scope and space, right? Like how many times have you been forced to think about whether or not you're going to meet a deadline or stay late or go to a family member's game or dinner with a loved one? Or, you know, we will cut off our own lifelines, right, in order to make certain using because we think that that's what's the right thing. But in actuality, it's not generative for the companies and the organizations in which we work. And it's not generative for ourselves or the people who love us. So I think there's an opportunity for us to think in project management principles on a personal level.
Oh, that's so good because that resonates so clearly. I always tell people it's a triple constraint conversation, right? It's always a triple constraint conversation. I apply that to so many other aspects of my life. I'm like, listen, you know, I don't have unlimited time, scope, or resources, right? So how do we make this happen? Now, before we get too much further, I do want to just touch on one thing. I am not, when I say, you know, I was one of only one woman, you know, only a few women in my graduating class, and I was in a male-dominated field, I'm not blaming men. I just want to be clear that I'm not blaming men. And there were very specific times where I would watch the women in leadership in organizations that I was in and see that they were not being treated the same, right? So what the executives at the top of, you know, an organization, for example, were able to get away with were the female at the top of the organization. For example, there was one organization I worked in and there was all men in the leadership positions except for one woman. And she was treated differently. She was treated differently by everyone and was called all kinds of names for doing a fraction of what the same men in that organization were doing. And I got to know her really well, asked her to mentor me, and I wanted to learn what it was like being in her shoes as a single female leader at the top of the organization. And we had a very frank conversation about where a lot of this animosity towards her were coming from. And a lot of it wasn't the men. The men were just going along with it because they didn't know any better. But there were a lot of women in the organization that were actually underlying her challenges, the resistance, and a lot of the name calling. And it blew me away when I realized that was happening to her because it was happening to me too. And I asked her, how do you deal with that? Like, how do you handle a situation like that? And what do I do in this situation? And she said to me, Laura, I want you to remember right now, and I remember where we were sitting. I remember what we were talking about. I remember the context. I can even remember what she was wearing when she said this to me because it hit me so hard. And this was, gosh, I don't even, can't even count the number of years ago now. And she said, I want you to remember the feeling you have right now and the feeling you have of other women holding you back. And she said, and you need to commit to never let another woman feel the way you do right now for the rest of your life, for the rest of your career. And she said, when you see a woman that is coming up and that deserves to have a seat at that table, you reach your hand behind you and you bring her along, right? And this is not like instead of men or, you know, shame on men. It had nothing to do with men. It had to do with women supporting and lifting up other women instead of believing that there weren't enough seats at the table. Make a bigger darn table.
Make a bigger table.
Yes. Make a bigger table. We have the power to do that. And frankly, in my career and in my experience, it was often men that supported me. It was often men that made a seat for me at the table. It was often men that were willing to, frankly, since I started PMO Strategies a decade ago, it would take more than a few minutes to name all the men that allowed me to stand on their shoulders.
Same.
To elevate my voice, you know, and I'm so grateful for that. And they know they are my heroes. And I talk about them all the time. And I'm so grateful for all of them. I couldn't even list them all. There's so many. But that's the interesting thing. Many of the influencers in the PMO space, for example, that I have built strong friendships with, let me stand on their shoulders when I was getting started. And that was incredible. And so I just want to be clear in all of this that there is no male bashing going on.
At all. No,
there is a problem, though. And we have to figure out how to get to the root of that problem and change it, right? We need to be agents of change here.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, I thank God for those men, to your point, who, you know, said, you know what? I literally, my first job that I was talking about in aerospace, I'll never forget. The same way that you say that you'll never forget, the man that hired me, literally, as he was signing my offer, chuckled. And he said, I'm going to piss people off, but you know what? I don't care. And I thank God for that man.
Yeah.
Because he said to me, he was like, you're smart. He was like, people like you and I like you. And he was like, I want you to know that you can do this. And so just those seemingly small moments.
Yeah.
Been beacons for me, you know, throughout my entire career. Because I say if one person can make a seat, then that means there's somebody else who wants to make a seat. So for every five men and or women, right? Because we've both talked about that, you know, some of the struggles that we've happened or that have happened have been at the hands of a woman. But for every 5 people who are naysayers, you know, you just need to find that one, right? Folks say you just need to have that one yes, that one person who's willing to go to bat for you, that one person who says, no, this is my time to repay all of the times that someone else poured into me, and to stand on their shoulders. And when you get that chance, you stand. You stand tall. You stand like 10 toes down for yourself, head up and chest out, regardless of what else is going on. Because if someone else is saying, I'm going to give you a platform, you make certain that the way that you give them thanks is to stand tall and then in turn repay the favor, right? So I agree.
Oh my gosh, that is so good. Stand tall and make them proud. Oh my gosh, this is so good. So what piece of advice would you give to project managers now that are listening to this and trying to figure out how to address the challenges we've been talking about here?
The one thing that I have found beneficial throughout my career in every organization, in every role, at all levels, because let's be honest, the higher you go, the challenges still come. And sometimes they're actually more insidious than they are when you are at lower levels or just starting out, is to find a safe space to vent, to cry, to hoot, to holler, and also to celebrate. And the reason why I add the celebrate in is as you ascend in your career, I think it bears saying that not everyone you think is your friend is actually your friend.
Yeah.
So I talk a lot about safety, right? Like psychological safety at work is like this big buzzword. And a lot of the organizations that we work in or as consultants, right? Like we go into places and they're just not safe or good places for people to be. It's important for us as individuals to make assessments about where we can actually unload. And you need to find those places and those people in the organization, because that's where you get connected to other pieces of information about your upward mobility, about the problems in the organization, about who's actually on your side when you get, when those 9 box conversations happen and you're not in the room. So you need to find a safe place for you to vent, to cry, to be upset, and also to celebrate, because not everyone actually wants you to succeed. So that's, I think, the single most important piece of advice that I would give.
Wow, that's really good. Okay, so I definitely did that in organizations. I found people willing to mentor me, to coach, to guide, to help me through the struggles. And sometimes it wasn't in the most obvious places. Sometimes it would be a colleague that was on my team that was more of a trusted advisor, you know, that I would either bring in, or, you know, a consultant I was bringing in that I'd worked with before that could help me kind of navigate the next challenges in the situation. Or it, sometimes it was in unlikely places. Like one organization, there was a sponsor slash like the business owner of everything we were working on. And it was a man, and he was relatively new to the organization, but very senior. And this was a very, I don't know how to say it, culture heavy organization, right? And the way you got change done in this organization was very dependent upon the culture and working within the culture. And I would ask him for advice all the time. He had a vested interest, because if my PMO was successful, he was successful, because the big strategic initiatives we were running for his organization were, you know, ultimately going to be how he was measured. So he wanted me to be successful. And I can tell you the number of times I was in his office going, this is just ridiculous. How do we get this change done here? We're hitting barriers we shouldn't even hit. We're hitting resistance in places where this is the work they want us to do, but they're not helping us do it. And so it's not necessarily, well, I would definitely say manage the venting you do with your boss, because at the end of the day, they're looking for you to bring solutions, not just problems. And you need to find people that you trust in the organization, one, to build relationships, to actually get things done that need to get done, and two, to help you remove the barriers and help you think through how things work in the organization. I also would suggest, though, that you have people you trust and know and can talk to outside of 100%, the organization.
Absolutely.
Because there's only so much vulnerability you want people 100%. In the organization to see, because you don't know who you can really trust, frankly.
Correct.
And if you lean too hard into people you think you can trust and you can't, that could be create a real setback in your career or in that role. So that's why we have the Impact Accelerator Mastermind. It's all PMO and strategy delivery leaders.
And it's good.
World. Thank you. It's a pretty rocking program. I mean, but that's a safe space. Everyone in there is under NDA. It's a safe space for people to really vent. And like, there's some tears sometimes, right? And it's about helping people really have a safe place to work through the things they need to work through and not feel so alone in the process. Because especially for like PMO and strategy delivery leaders, there might only be one in an entire organization. So nobody else really gets what you're doing or how you're doing it. It's very different being the head of the marketing department or the head of the sales department or the head of the IT department, because everybody kind of gets that. But a lot of people don't get what the PMO does. So
right.
That's why we have that, is so that people aren't getting too vulnerable in the workplace, right, ending up hurting themselves, right? So anyway, that's super important. So I love that advice. I have one more question for you that I think we need to give people just some parting words of wisdom before we wrap up here. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. So how do you do it all, right? Like, how do you do all the things? Whether you're a woman or a man or, you know, anybody, how do you handle all the things you're doing with your life as a whole and still having a successful career?
So there's tactically, I'm going to speak tactically, and then I'm going to speak from like a soul perspective, because sure, like I said, that's like super important to me, right? Right. And so tactically, I say this all the time. I'm a big fan of a clean sheet of paper. I literally will write out all the things that need to get done just to get them out of my brain, because sometimes our brains are computers and we know that every computer can only process but so much. So right, sometimes you just need to get it out in a note on your phone, like a Google Doc, whatever, and just get it out. And then I will just leave it. Mm-hmm. Then I'll think about what are the most important things that need to be done today. And I will only pick three of them.
Oh, so funny.
I will only pick three of them. And so sometimes those are things like on the list, I'll realize that I hadn't eaten all day, so it'll be eat dinner. Go for a walk has ended up on my list.
Mm-hmm.
Things like call my mom, mm-hmm, you know, has ended up on my list because my mom is older and I hadn't spoken to her in a couple of days. And we know that those days are golden, right? Because time.
Right.
So then I'll pick three. And then I'll put the list away and decide when I'm going to come back to the list. So that's tactical. Like, and when I put it away, I put it away.
Yeah. Before you go on to the other one, I just want to say that that has been advice that my dear friend, advisor, partner in crime, and, you know, partner in a co-founder of the nonprofit Project Management for Change has been telling me for as many years as I've known him. He would literally, I'd be so frustrated and overwhelmed because I want to do so many things that he'd kind of get in my face and say, pick three and only three. And that's how I figured out how to prioritize. So that has worked really well for me. And when I don't do it, I pay for it. So
it's a mess.
Yeah.
So then the other thing that I will say is that I live and die by my calendar.
Yeah.
I block nail appointments, hair appointments, spa time, family time, time to eat, time to check emails, time to shop. Like, I live and die by my calendar. And I schedule time to do nothing. Like, I schedule time to have brain-free time. So those are the two tactical things. And then I want to
talk good
from a soul perspective, right? Because I keep saying you can't pour from an empty cup. I believe the way that it's supposed to work, if you think about life as a fountain, right? And you have a cup and you walk up to a fountain and ultimately you fill your cup. And then there comes a point where the water just comes in and then it just starts to overflow.
Yeah.
You're supposed to give from the overflow, not from what's in the cup. Because if we give from what's in the cup, then the cup will end up empty. So then that means that we have the responsibility to make certain that we are so full that people can just come up and scoop from the overflow, the way that a fountain works. So how do you do that? You find things that nourish your soul. In this conversation, I have talked a lot about knowing yourself. I've talked about making certain that like you understand where you draw lines. I draw lines at harm, including harm to myself. So right. I don't overschedule myself. I know I can feel, most of us can feel like when we're peopled out, right? Like,
yo, that was me yesterday. I was like, I had 9 meetings and then a dinner.
Right, you're like, I don't want it anymore. So find things that nourish your soul. Me personally, I'm with you. People would say that I'm an extrovert, but I'm really not. Like the best thing in the world for me is to be like in my bed with a cozy blanket and a cup of tea, a good magazine and a book. And I'm like, please leave me alone. Like, don't talk to me.
So love it. Find
things that nourish your soul. And then not to get all religious, but to pick a Sabbath or a day where you do nothing, right? Really, that's all that means. You're not checking email. You're not overscheduled. It literally is a free flow day. And for me, those days are Saturdays. And so sometimes like we're making pancakes in the morning and that turns into a walk, or we do nothing. We watch movies, whatever. But whatever that is, you pick one day a week where you say, I'm going to allow myself to be a human being. And whatever I feel like doing today is what's going to get done. And tomorrow on Sunday or the day before on Friday, I can be scheduled and I can have lists galore. But on Saturday, it's my day. So that's my final recommendation, is to make sure that you pick a day of renewal.
Oh my gosh, that's a big one. And I love the saying, be a human being, not a human doing, and give yourself the day to be a human being. You just triggered that for me. I am going to put this into practice myself right away because this feels so important to my ability to fill my cup and have it overflow. So thank you so much for the advice.
No problem. I've been doing it for the last year, and I will tell you, it has made me a better human. It's made me a better friend. It's made me a better parent. It's made me a better sister. And ultimately, it's made me a better person to work with. So I think it makes a big difference.
Oh, huge. Oh my gosh. And whenever I do things like that, I always say to myself, why don't I do this more often? And it's about building in the habits and putting it on the calendar and then living by that calendar and not just overriding all the time with other doing when you need to have some being. I love it. Aprielle, thank you so much for all this fabulous advice. I'm so honored to share this platform with you and let this community see what a rock star you really are. So thank you so much for your time.
I am just so grateful for you. I've learned so much from you. And every single time we have a connection and a touch point, I just feel like all the more enriched and my world is better because you're in it. So thank you.
Oh, wow. You're going to make me cry. You're why I do what I do. You and all the impact drivers listening to this episode. So thank you, impact driver. Go fill your cup so that it's overflowing. Make a bigger table so that everyone can be a part of helping your organizations thrive. Hey, Impact Driver, before you go, I want to remind you to join us for International PMO Day on May 14th. This is going to be a big one for us here at PMO Strategies because we are celebrating something really, really big. And I want to give you an opportunity to celebrate with us. Okay, I'm going to let you in on a little bit of the details. You know that book I've been writing, The Impact Engine? Well, I'm going to be letting you in on a secret on how you can get a copy of the book before it's in bookstores in September. So make sure you join us at pmostrategies.com/PMO Day. That's pmostrategies.com/PMO Day. Celebrate with us, celebrate with your team, and I'll give you a little insight as to how you can get the Impact Engine book for yourself. I'll see you there. That's it for this episode. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye for now.
Bye.